Welcome to the Lending Forward podcast, brought to you by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. This is your home for real discussions about the mortgage and housing industry. Our hosts are here bringing you firsthand accounts every week from people at the heart of the business. And we're chatting with professionals from all corners of the industry as they help cultivate transparency around the future of the industry we love. Together, we are lending forward all we know to you. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Let's dive in.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Lending Forward. And today, Eliza and I have the honor of hosting Spencer Does About. And we could say does about 100 pushups a day. I love that. And I think that's a great way to remember his last name. So thank you very much for that, Spencer. Spencer is the CEO of ADM Mortgage CRM. And it's also been on the TED platform at least a couple of times. Has started up a nonprofit before. He's a doer, and I can already tell he's a fighter of mediocrity. And I'm really looking forward to diving in here with Spencer and Eliza. So Spencer, with that said, I'd like to give you a second to introduce yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think you said it right. It's super exciting to be here chatting with you all. I've sort of had an interesting entrepreneurial journey, starting in kind of the nonprofit world, helping bring clean water to people around the world and building kind of a crowdfunding technology platform around that. Fell in love with technology through that venture and really from there have dabbled in different startup interests. And like most startups, you kind of run into brick walls over and over again and try to learn as much as you can along the way. And I'm sort of the last, call it 6 years of my life, found myself in this sort of real estate space, doing things starting on the real estate side, predictive data and analytics, now into kind of CRM automation, data intelligence stuff here in the lending space. So I'm very, really excited to be here and chat with you all today.
Awesome.
So, okay, I have to ask this question because that can mean so many different things. And that's so many different interests wrapped up into one person. How did you get from the nonprofit space into data analytics in a mortgage CRM? That's a very broad leap, it seems like. So I'm interested in the cascading thought or experiences that led you from point A to point seems like Z. What got you to where you're at now, and how did you make that transition through those spaces?
Sure. So I like to call myself, and my wife will certainly attest to this idea, that I'm an obsessive problem solver. And so for me, and like anything, I think Jeff Bezos says it right, when it's like, you don't pick your passions pick me. And so for me, I don't pick my problems, the problems kind of pick me, in a sense that I obsess and try to solve them. And so in kind of doing hands for others and the water stuff, it was really just seeing people walk, firsthand, hours and hours for water that looked more like coffee than it did water. It's like, wow, this seems like a problem. And then you start to understand the economic impacts, downstream impacts of all that. It's like, wow, I want to do something to help this. And so that problem just sort of picked me. I've always been someone that's more kind of like an engineer, love kind of new technology. And, I think it was basically a good friend of mine who was starting on real estate a number of years back, who just basically talked about, I've got all these buyer leads. It's really hard to, kind of convert these, and I'm learning, and buyer leads are fickle, and I do all this work for them and they move around, and I wish I could just get more listings. And it's like, okay, well, so why do people sell a home? It's sort of kind of going down the rabbit hole of like, what are the data points that indicate someone might be interested in selling, or having that conversation, using that to kind of tee up those conversations for realtors. And so I think that's how I've kind of moved around, and, who knows what problem will capture my attention 5-10 years from now. So that's both terrifying and exciting all at the same time, right? So
yeah, that's awesome.
I love that. Hey, what a novel idea, asking why people sell a home. I like that.
Yeah.
And honestly, I can see the thought process, from that question, like leading all the way to technology and building it out and coming up with automation and obviously AI now as well, built into it. Like that's a pretty cool path to go down.
Yeah, that's when people first meet me and we're kind of talking about stuff, I like to ask the question, so what, so what, so what, until it's like, let's actually get to the meat of it. And
that's right.
for some people, they think I'm challenging them. I'm really not. I'm just more curious. If someone's like, well, I sent out this newsletter and we got all 20% of people opened it. It's like, well, so what? Well, you know, it's, and then, well, people saw it. So what? Like, so what are you doing that for? Like, what are you trying to achieve? And so anyway, it's some people kind of get taken the wrong way, but it's not meant to challenge. It's meant to just understand for sure. So definitely how my brain works.
I think even that philosophy of that kind of so what notion, you know, being in industries that are really, you know, we were talking about this earlier, sales driven and trying to get to know your customer and their needs. Even thinking of our own day-to-day practical actions to try to get to the next deal or trying to get to the next referral partner, thinking, okay, so I sent out a newsletter. So what? I hosted a CE. So what? Like, and, you know, kind of analyzing our motivations and our actions aligned with those. That's probably just a very simple practice that people can implement to, you know, take into their own business and see what it can do to transform what your outcomes are. Simple, but actionable.
Love it. I love it too. And again, we're, you know, kind of, you know, mentioned kind of the data stuff and, you know, it's, that's why data is so helpful and important because it helps you quantify where you know, what the ROI on your time is. Like the most precious commodity, you know, as a loan officer, but you know, really anybody is time. Like you only have so much time to, you know, hang out with your family, wine and dine referral partners, talk to your borrowers. And so I think it's really important to understand, well, what are you getting for the different things that you're doing? And then just really looking at it and say, should I be spending my time here? Or should I be spending my time on doing something else? You know, so totally with you.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing about that is when you start analyzing the actions separate from the emotions and you're just looking at strictly data, you can be emotional about people. We're in the relationship business. But if you're unemotional about the data, unemotional about the numbers, you can really look kind of true, like, you know, truly at your business and be able to transform, you know, what you kind of see as a result, you know, adjusting your actions to account for those things. So I love that because it's simple. It's not easy though, because it's forcing yourself to be objective too.
It is. And yeah. And obviously humans are a hybrid of emotions and, you know, and also you have the capacity to reason. Right. And so it's, but I think you're right. Like change and changing behaviors, it takes time and it takes reinforcement. And you know, either kind of sides of that can be a catalyst. But you're 100% right. Like if you think something that you're doing is really, you know, helping you generate, let's say, more leads as a loan officer, and the data shows it's not, you know, it doesn't mean most people aren't just going to say, "Oh, I'm just stop doing that forever." But you start seeing that every week. For a few weeks, you're like, you know what? All right, fine. I get the message, right? And so that's where data can certainly help you kind of navigate those decisions for sure.
I have one more question, then I'll pitch it over to Jeff because I'm fascinated. I can ask this all day long. But you know, you've gone from, you know, the nonprofit space into the space that you're in now, and certainly that hasn't come without its own kind of friction in some respects and some obstacles that you've had to navigate. How do you navigate those? And do you find that you're more efficient in navigating your obstacles the further you are in your career? Or how do you kind of translate those obstacles into opportunities? What does that look like for you and the way you approach your business and any of the other things that you're working on?
Yeah, for sure. I know we were talking about, sir, just, you know, the market conditions these past couple of years, how hard it's been, talking about, you know, persistence, things like that. You know, I think the more that you kind of put the time in and learn a particular industry or get good at your craft, the more successful you're always going to be. And having that persistence when things are tough to try things, look at the data, adjust the strategy, you know, create new strategies. And so I think for me, as I've, you know, built more and more software and done more and more in this particular space, I mean, the better and better I've gotten at it and the better products you build, the better decisions you make, all of that stuff. And I think particularly nonprofit space is very interesting. And it definitely, there's an element of the emotion and data. But you know, when people give money, it really is an emotional decision. They've done a ton of studies on this. You know, I think the most famous looked at it kind of put people in three different rooms, and you had one group who basically saw a picture of someone starving and said, "Give money," and then the next one was a picture with some facts on the, you know, hunger crisis. And then the third one was just like posters on facts about how bad the hunger crisis was. And it was like 7-1, just the photo, raised more money. And you would think, well, maybe a little bit of the photo plus the data. Nope. And this has been redone a number of times. And so the nonprofit space is interesting. It's how do you kind of connect with people on that level and get them to engage? I think for me, as more of the engineer mind, what was challenging about that is like, it wasn't always a rational conversation as to why someone would donate or want to get involved. And certainly when people buy software or do that, it's a combo of emotions and data, but you can kind of, if you can prove ROI, people can, you know, do buy, right? So I think that's what's been interesting is for me to kind of see both ends of that spectrum, for sure. And kind of have to navigate and understand how to get people to buy technology, which is very different as to why people would donate to help bring clean water to people, for instance.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of that testing, the philosophy just has to be break stuff faster.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's what's to say, like he or she with the most failures wins. And it's you know, no one likes to hear that. But for those of us that have experienced failure, learn from it and kind of come back to not make those mistakes again and overcome it. Like you realize just how true that is for sure.
Yeah.
All success is built on failure.
Yep.
Yes, it is.
Hey, so I want to take you back to the nonprofit world for a second, and you've already started touching on it with the what you did, bringing clean water to other countries. But I want to take you back to some of the lessons that you learned in doing that. So I know that you've got this nonprofit that you created when you were in high school, called Hands for Others, and for anyone who's listening, please. Check it out. It's Hands for the number 4 Others. And what a great whole philosophy around this. And I'm going to sum it up in my words real quick and not to take away from your words. But, one of the things that you learn from this is that people wanted to donate more to this nonprofit when they got to see the result of what they were giving. And I went to Tanzania last year. So part of a nonprofit. We brought clean water and we're actually building a school and building a well as part of that trip with the funds that we raised for it. And so I'm 100% on board and I know exactly what you're talking about when you give your TED Talks and you talk about the cattle actually, drinking in the same water that people were getting water for cleaning their clothes and for drinking and all that. It is eye-opening to an extent that people usually can't comprehend unless they've actually seen it with their own eyes. You learned some big lessons out of that. And I think you've got a 3-point, three P's, right? That came out of that. And I want to hand that over to you so you can build on that, please.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's so many lessons you learn from all of that. Yes. And I think in terms of building the movement, getting people to collaborate with us, whether it was from people giving up their time and volunteering, people giving up hard-earned money, right, and donating, all those things. And so I think the first P you learn is that you have to have passion for what you do. This is something that has come very counterintuitively to me as more of someone that is more of an kind of engineering mind, more on the logic side, more of a T on the Myers-Briggs than an F, right? Thinking or feeling whatever. Yeah. This has been super important. Like you have to kind of get up in the morning believing in what you're doing and wanting to do it. I think this has been a challenge sort of in our industry the last few years, right? I think there's been a lot of people that maybe got into it in 2020 or 2021, it was great. And then all of a sudden that's you're in 2023, this past year, you're looking at it just saying what am I doing here? Right. And a lot of those people left the industry, right? Of course, a number of people have been in this for a long time and they find a lot of value in helping people get into homes and help, providing them with good, options to build a great foundation financially for themselves and their families or, kind of whatever that why is. But you realize just how important it is when things get tough, right? And so, no matter how hard you can work or how disciplined you are or all of that stuff. Because there's some people that just have insane work ethic and just, it's, you know, if they don't really love what they're doing or feel connected to it, it's really hard to keep going, right? And in the nonprofit world, especially, it's like so many people tell you no. So many people think they know how to do what you're doing better, right? Like, and are critical in different ways. You know, and it's just, you have to, it kind of leads you, the second P is the persistence P. We kind of touched on that a little bit, but, you know, I think passion does lead to persistence. If you're not passionate about what you're doing, you're not going to persist. And so you have to kind of find that why. And then the persistence piece is, you know, if you're trying to climb a mountain, and there's not really like a map on how to do it, you got to try. It might take you 2 tries. It might take you 10 tries, right? But that's the key, right? And so understanding, you know, what do we want to do as professionals? Well, you know, or, you know, also just as people this year, but what are things we care about? And are we willing to get, you know, try 10 times, right? Like, is that summit cool enough? Is it a big enough deal to us that we'll try it 10 different ways? And if the answer is no, you should go find a summit that you will attempt it to summit it in 10 different ways, right? And so I think that the third piece is patience, right? Which kind of lead, you know, I think is, you know, kind of, you know, I think relates to the first two for sure, right? But it's, you know, ultimately you have to be able to, you know, wait for good stuff to start happening. It doesn't always happen on day one. You know, just because you really care about something and you're trying to do something about it, or you care about getting better in your career, or maybe it's as simple as you care about maybe creating a social media presence as a loan officer, right? To be more well-known in your community. But yeah, you know, you're going to have to try different strategies to make that work. And you're going to have to, it's going to take some time to build that out and for it to work, right? And so they all kind of loop together, right? It's like,
they do.
You know, you got to care about what you do. You got to be willing to try it different ways, and you got to be willing to wait. Right. And they all, if you don't have all three, you know, it's very difficult to find success, especially in, you know, when times are tough, which, you know, we all can relate to. They have certainly been tough the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think going backwards, it paints a picture too, right? Because if you've got persistence, it makes patience easier. And if you've got passion, it makes persistence easier. So you're right. They all loop together, and, you know, and all three of them together make just this powerful, you know, you can move things, you can move mountains, you can run through walls, you can climb up a mountain, you know, you'll find a way. So I love the three P's, and I zero in on passion. I'm a why guy, love Simon Sinek, love knowing your why. And I'm going to guess, and just to bring this around, I'm going to guess that you have a why for your company as well. And I would love to hear your why, if you don't mind. We'll just put you on the spot here real quick.
Yeah. So here's the why, and here's the story, right? And you can see the obsessive problem solver kicking into gear, right? So, when we were doing Lead Faucet, which was the predictive data, and, you know, so there's some aspects of selling data, some aspects of selling leads, you know, and conversations around that. So we had a loan officer that was buying our leads, and probably was sharing them with agents and RESPA aside, you know, who's that's what he was doing. And anyway, he wanted me to get those leads into his system. And so I wasn't as familiar with tech on the lending side. So I said, well, look, great. Well, what are you using? Well, I'm using, you know, I think it was Agent Legend or something. It's like, which is real estate technology. It's like, oh, that's real estate technology. I didn't know lenders use that. He's like, yeah, I also use, you know, Follow Up Boss and Line Desk, which are two real estate CRMs. I was like, what? Like, so that was okay. So what's, and I, you know, come to find out, it was like, he was using Agent Legend for lead conversion. He's using Follow Up Boss for like his pipeline management. He was using, you know, Top of Mind for like the marketing and database and the LOS integration. And then he was using Line Desk for like his texting capabilities. And so the first thing, quite a tech stack. And a lot of top producers are doing similar things, right?
Yeah.
Like they have a way that they think it should work, and they're like, nothing suits my needs. And so, of course, that's where my mind's like, oh, interesting. Well, you know, so then I was like, well, I get it. Like, well, why don't you, you have this corporate platform. Like, why don't you just, you know, I'm sure they would build it all for you or whatever. Like, I'm sure corporate doesn't like the fact that you're using all these things. Like, what happens if someone opts out of your Surefire? How does that make its way into Lion Desk? He's like, you know, well, I'm a top producer. They let me do what I want to do. Number one, number two, like my assistant goes in once a month. You know, I'm like, okay, this is so interesting.
This is a nightmare.
And so,
yeah, waiting to happen.
Yeah.
No, exactly. But oddly, it sounds very familiar.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm sure some people can relate listening, you know? Yeah. And so I think for me, the two things that I saw was, okay, there's not a great, I asked, like, so why not just build this out in your corporate platform? And because I'm thinking, like, you know, Salesforce, crazy expensive, but you kind of can build anything, right? Yep. You know, and like, well, you know, I mean, just, in, you know, top of mind is more of a marketing platform. I just like couldn't build all these workflows in there. And so that's why I'm using these systems. And so I think for me, that was like the two challenges I saw there that I've since been obsessed with solving is, first, how do you create a system that the top producer can use for all of those functions, right? Because having it helps you consolidate your tech stack. You're not buying five things. They all talk to each other. So can we solve that problem, which is clearly a problem if this guy is using these five systems? And then how the dynamic, you know, I was really struck by the comment, like, well, I'm a top producer of corporate, lets me do what I want to do. And this is very unique to mortgage, where you get your leads from referral sources. So if it turns out that IMBs, banks, credit unions, broker, I mean, they're good at doing loans, you know, like they wouldn't be in business if they're bad at doing loans, especially in 2024. So if the top producer doesn't get to use what they want, they can go like down the street somewhere else who will recruit them gladly and let them use what technology they want. And so I just sort of observed this real interesting chat dynamic between the enterprise wants control, branding, compliance, marketing. The producer really wants to be able to customize. They have kind of ideas on how their business should operate. And what happens is you have a corporate system that the producers really can't use the way they want to. So then they go use other stuff. And so what I think of is like, how do we bridge that gap? How do we create something that is what good enough for the producers? There's a lot of value there. They'll use it, but also kind of helps corporate support them from a marketing standpoint or from a compliance standpoint. So kind of that bridge that has been that has been sort of the obsession, if you will. It's a very interesting Rubik's Cube. I kind of find myself playing with a little bit there for sure.
Well, and honestly, I was going to ask you to give like a 15, 20 second, you know, commercial, but I think you just did, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I didn't mean it to be a commercial. It was
no, that just, was perfect. No, that was perfect.
That's absolutely the why. And that's the story. And it's been 4 years since I heard that story. And that's what I've been doing, you know?
I love that. But that actually, you know, that paints a really good picture versus, you know, just going out with what you do, right? So if you didn't paint that picture with that story, and that's key for anybody in sales, like we sell through stories, or we should be selling through stories, because that's what people remember. And that's what's relatable to people. So by giving that story of how it started to where it happened, all by doing it through your passion, you know, your why, that's the best commercial I think you can give.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Yep.
Well, absolutely. And we'll honestly, I'm intrigued. I'm very intrigued. So I'm going to be looking into it more and just checking it out because you are right. You just hit on a bunch of the different things that are a problem in our industry all at once. And one of those things that is that there's so many different tech tools and they just don't all communicate with each other. So I'm intrigued. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to hit on in addition to the technology part, because that only solves so much, and we talked about this earlier, is we are ultimately in the people business. And again, kind of hinting back to all the different spheres that you've been in throughout the course of your career, there's an element of leadership because, you know, as an individual contributor or entrepreneur or what have you, you know, there's certainly a number of things that you can do on your own. But describe to me how your journey through like doing it yourself versus, you know, bringing on a team and kind of expanding the reach that you have, like, what does that look like for you and the space that you're in, especially as you're trying to bridge technology and mortgage and real estate? What does that look like for you? How do you find the right people? What's the rubric that you kind of utilize to, you know, find qualified teammates that share that same vision, values that you might have?
Yeah. So first, I think building teams is very, very, very hard, or at least it's been very, very hard for me. And if you're like building a team for the first time and you think it's going well, you should really, really look deeply at it, because it probably isn't. It's a hard thing to do. And if it is for you, you know, awesome. But just my experience, it's been really hard. And so the way that I look at it is, you know, we all have our strengths. And some people, it might be from a sales angle, meeting people, right? Others might be from a process organization standpoint. Others, you know, might be technology, right? Whatever it is, we all have something that we're really good at. And I think, you know, you kind of get a multiplier effect for every minute you spend doing that, right? So for instance, like, I'm not a great creative person. So I could probably create something cool, but it would take me 10 hours versus somebody who's very creative, it might take them an hour, right? And I might be able to build something or figure something out technically, it might take me an hour, but it might take that creative person 10 hours. So I have like a 10x advantage over a lot of people spending time maybe on something tech related versus someone who might be, you know, building content for social media, getting out there, networking, or, you know, coming up with creative ideas, right? And so I think it's very important to understand, like, where do you have the multiplier effect? Because every minute you spend there, it's like you're spending 10, right? As opposed to something you're not so good at. So I think it's starting there with your strength. I think it's understanding, you know, kind of what those weaknesses are. There's a limited amount of time in a day and what we can do. I am not a believer at all in saying you should try and make weaknesses become a strength at all, right? But yeah. I do think you have to make sure they don't totally ruin your success, right? And you see that all the time where someone is an amazing face and salesperson. They get all these leads, they convert none of them because they have no process, right?
That's right.
You see it on the other side. I've got the best process in the world and I'm doing one transaction a month, right? It's like, that's great, but that's not, you know, and so you have to make sure that the other side is taken care of. And so I think it's just looking within ourselves, what is it that I can do really well, better than, you know, just about everyone else I know? What is it that I do poorly? And so then I think it's, you want to put yourself in a position where you're maximizing your strength. And then you're looking to, how can I make sure this weakness isn't overcome, right? So if you're that great salesperson, okay, fine. I'm going to find someone, some company, some coach, some technology to help me convert these leads, right? I know I'm not going to do it. So I need good automation there, right? If I'm not a creative person, who's someone I can, who can maybe help or consult with, or what's a tool, or, you know, or, you know, there's, let's look at something like a Canva with generative AI to create these some cool, like, great, what can I do to help up level that? And so, I'm big on just kind of looking at that. And then as you grow from a team perspective, that's where those hires can make a lot of sense. And, you know, so I think if you're that great salesperson, having someone that is good from an organizational process standpoint will free you up, help you make more money, convert more leads, do more transactions, all of that, right? And so that could make a lot of sense at a certain point. And so I always look at building teams around, like, you know, how can I'm going to spend most of my time doing what I'm good at? How do I make sure the other stuff is taken, you know, into account? People are doing it well. But, you know, like, managing people is really challenging, because it turns out people can't read each other's minds, you know, which is something I feel like I look back at the way I manage people early. It's like, oh, just come in here and build out a good process. It's like, what, you know, what does that mean, right? How do you measure success? Like, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, look, right now I got 100 leads last month. I converted one of them. Can we convert 10 this month? Cool. Humans, like, I can figure that out, right? I can work with that. But if it's just like, make the lead conversion better, this is the problem. Like, I'm sorry, but that's, you're not setting up that person for success. And this is why a lot of times the first people you hire, you work with, doesn't work out. And it's really not their fault. It's your fault, right? Or at least in my experience, it's been my fault, because I just haven't set those parameters very clearly. So I think it's like, you know, what are you bringing them on to do? And what does success look like? And then very, very, very clearly, you know, make, you know, working with that person so that they understand that. Because it's the whole saying, right? Like, look, not everyone is a great fit, and you'll know that pretty quickly. But if they kind of get in there and are doing a good job and it's after 90 days, it's 100% your fault because you just haven't set the good, a good kind of parameters for them to work with. So I've certainly, we can unpack more of that, but those are my high level thoughts. And it's been, I've something I've had to, I'm very entrepreneurial. So and it turns out, and a lot of loan officers are obviously, but it turns out people can't read your mind. You really have to, you know, this is what I need. And this is, you know, specifically what I'm going to measure you against, right? And people need that framework, right?
So I think it's one of those things where, you know, we were talking earlier, you know, in the tech space, you break stuff fast. In the people business, we can't break people fast. We just have to make quicker decisions, right? Yep. About whether they're a fit or not. So I love that philosophy because I think it helps you. The clearer you are, the Chick-fil-A philosophy is clear is kind. Right. Mm-hmm. So the quicker and the clearer that you are with expectations, with stated outcomes and what you're aiming to do together, the quicker and more efficiently people can move together. So I love that. Jeff, did you have
and just to give you a, sorry, I want a quick insight on that from like a tech company, because I know a lot of people wear LOs, like there's different things I'd measure my team against. Right. So it might be, you know, it might be something like, let's say on the product side, people might find this interesting, but let's say we're coming out with a new feature around on the data side. And like one of the things we do is like schedule reporting. So like we have someone that owns this idea of by the end of the year, 50% of people on our platform are going to be using this feature. That's their goal, right? Is like they have to figure out how to make it intuitive, easy in the product, educate marketing, educate account, all that stuff and bring it into the implementation process. And so, you know, it sounds simple, but it's like, that is something we've decided as a company is important. Someone owns that. Right. Yep. And so there's no doubt as to whether that person's doing a good job or not. Because that's what they, what they own versus saying, hey, you know, get more people using this thing. It's like, well, what does that mean? You know, like
it's specific,
you know, so yeah, it's very specific. And so that's, and again, that is not something I would have done 3 years ago. And it's something that, you know, I've had, you know, people have had to kind of, you know, help coach me and hit me on the side of the head until I've understood that that's to your point, it's the kind way to really manage and build an organization that can scale and move quickly and solve problems.
Well, and Spencer, I'm so glad you brought that up because I believe that from listening to some of your other content out there that you actually pay your people, you know, and, you know, based on how much somebody uses the platform or the tools that you're creating. And I think that is just, that is innovative right there. That is, you know, I don't know many people that do that. But I think that is a fantastic way to actually do it in your space. That's, it's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. No, that's the North Star. The North Star is build tools that people use. Then you have to align incentives around them, right?
Absolutely.
So, 100%. It's not commonly done, but that's how we're doing it. And, you know, we might be wrong, but we're not confused, right? That's the whole
that's great.
You know, idea. Hopefully, we're not wrong. You know,
so. Yeah, absolutely. But if you are, you know, it's a fail, and then you learn from it, and then that's how you win. All success absolutely. Is built on failure.
But you also knew exactly what you failed at because you were specific. So
right, that's right.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that that you said was absolutely gold, and that is the living in your strengths. I'm a huge proponent of that too. One of my roles is internal sales coach, and I am huge on, you know, using your strengths versus solving for all your weaknesses yourself. Like, right? Use technology, use other people, bring other people in like to solve for your blind spots or your weaknesses. But you said something that I wrote down and I'm a note taker, right? I wrote a lot of things down from this, but one of my favorite things that I wrote down was, where do you have your multiplier effect? So I think that is the gold right there. And for everybody listening, and most people that are listening are in the sales world, find your multiplier effect and you can thank Spencer later for that, because that's huge. If you can live in your multiplier effect, you will do more business. You will help more people. You will make more money. Whatever your goals are, live in your multiplier effect. Eliza.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, I think we're at the saddest part of every one of our podcasts, which is the end. But we could have these conversations for hours and hours because we tend to have people on our podcast that are just incredible human beings. And you're certainly one of them, Spencer. So we want to say thank you for joining us today. But as we end our podcast, I'm going to ask you the golden question, and this can be whatever you want it to mean. How are you lending it forward?
I think that's a great question. For me, it's, I think it's recognizing kind of the phase of life that I'm in, which is, trying to build great technology for the mortgage industry and be, a good leader to our team and to our people. And, I've got two young kids, so spending the time with them. So that way, they can do great stuff for the world as well. So, I think those are the two main things that I'm focused on. And unfortunately, I don't have a lot of time for other stuff.
I think those are two very, very solid things to want to be known for. So I think those are, you can't question those. So
those are fantastic.
Good lending forward priorities. Yeah. So with that, I want to say thank you again for joining us, Spencer, and talking about ADM and the things that you're doing there and in the spaces that you're in. And we're honored to have you on the podcast today. And Jeff, I want to say thank you for joining me today. It's always good to have you as a co-host.
My pleasure. And thank you, Spencer. Wonderful stuff. And keep on doing great things in the world. The world needs you.
Yeah. Thanks again for having me. This was a really fun conversation. So excited to keep in touch and stay on the journey together.
Awesome. All right, guys, stay tuned until the next episode, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Thanks again for tuning into today's episode of the Lending Forward podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, follow us on Instagram at Lending Forward, on YouTube and LinkedIn. Tune in next week for another new episode and go lend something forward today. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSconsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender and employer. Located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 100, Virginia Beach, Virginia, 23452.